Blog Talk Radio.
And I do have permission to play this song as it was playing in the context of the phone. And good evening and welcome to another edition of Cannabis. As always, I am your host, Glenn Q, and I'm the co-founder and chapter coordinator for the Creative Care Beacon. We are the Ohio chapter of the Human Solution International. A little bit about them. They are a 501c3 organization that stands for the end of abuse of the abuse and violation of human rights. So if you or a loved one are going through a human rights violation case, cannabis case inject, please reach out to us. And the way you can do that is over at www.thsintl.org. Listen, you know, we don't know if you're going through something unless you reach out. Peggy and I went through our deal. We spent 3 years of fighting the law against us and medical patients, and the Human Solution helped us with that. Nonetheless, Kerry Cannon was a big help with that, and that's why we push and advocate for public awareness as well, because public awareness is what, you know, helped Peggy and I with our case, and the Human Solution helped with that. So listen, you know, something we push for, and I'm going to ask everybody, if you're watching here on Facebook, and if you're not on Facebook, jump over on Facebook later on, and please take a picture. It says, drop all charges against Adele and Aaron Wisdom. They're facing a 10-year prison sentence there in Missouri. Missouri. Also, somebody that's already serving a 10-year sentence, and I know that his mom and Kerry Cannon would appreciate it, pop in a sign real quick at the Lance Gore, and bring that to Kerry Cannon's attention and or Tracy Gore Pike. You can do the same thing with Adele and Aaron by going, you know, tagging Kerry Cannon and or Aaron or Adele Wisdom. But please get them out there because, it's huge for public awareness. And, you know, we always push and tell people to know your rights and know what you can and can't do and have people on your side because there's the people, more people that you can go to with court and court support is always better. Trust me, it really is. Peggy and I were sitting at that table, but we knew that we had 100,000 people behind us. We're standing, you know, pictures and the letters that they sent. If you don't believe me, you can always check our case file out there in Mercer County, Ohio. Look at it. Kerry Cannon got a whole collage of thousands of pictures sent in for us. And that's part of public awareness, and that's why we tell people to know what your rights are and to have an organization or some people behind you if you're facing something. So definitely please reach out to us. And again, the way you can do that is over at www.thsintl.org. Tonight's show is partially brought to you by the Holistic Cloud. If you are in the northeast part of Ohio, definitely go there and check them out in Bel Air. That's where they're at. You can always go to 3048 Belmont Street and go and see what all of your holistic needs and, you know, smoking accessories right there and check out Billy Blaze's store. Bill Blaze Jr. is an awesome guy. He really fights for Ohio, and I'm glad that we have a person like him fighting for us. Tonight's show, we've got Jeff Aker, who's with us. He is the founder of Hoosier Veterans for Medical Cannabis. We'll talk to him about, you know, what the importance is of having medical cannabis, especially for the veterans, and what it means to be a veteran and be able to have that access. We'll discuss that with him. And again, Jason and Shelly Straw is going to join us. They're our go-to cannabis nurses, you know, they are so amazingly full of educational things. So they're going to join us here after a bit too. They both were all three of them, as a matter of fact, last Monday was down at the Veterans Day event at the State House. And we're going to talk with them about that and how that went as well. Really quick, something that I want to ask, if you go to the Human Solution, I know that there is some prisoners that are already serving time that you can reach out to and write letters to. You can also go to CanadaConvictProject.com and or FreedomGrowForever.org. Either one of them two sites or organizations will help you lead you to, you know, a person that is serving time for cannabis that you can reach out to and write them. It is detrimental to their health, their mental health nonetheless, to receive a letter from somebody that they don't know, giving them encouragement and thanking them for serving the time that they're serving, allowing people in their state to have access, because that's what it really comes down to. I'm going to jump over here real quick because we got people joining us live on Facebook. And I'm thanking you guys, everybody that joins us live on Facebook. I appreciate it. Tracy Gore Pike, her son is serving a 10-year sentence. And the importance for the pictures, man, are huge. They get sent every month asking for leniency for him. So without further ado, we're going to jump right into it. We're going to bring Jeff in. And we're going to talk with him. Oh, there we go. We'll do it that way. There we go. We're going to talk with Jeff Staker. Good evening, sir. How are you?
Just fine. How are you?
I'm good, sir. And thank you for joining us here live on Cannaviews.
No problem.
Something I want to ask real quick. You are the founder of Hoosier Veterans for Medical Cannabis, correct? And I take it that you are a veteran yourself.
I am. I spent 11 years active in the Marines, and I did about 4 years Army Guard and retired from the Air Guard in 2004. I was a federal employee up until January of 2018. I was a DOD firefighter.
Wow. Well, hey, thank you very much for your service. I greatly appreciate you signing that check for allowing people to have, you know, freedom. I greatly appreciate your service, sir.
Sure.
Now, I want to ask, you know, the important, now I know, you know, being involved with the military and being a military man and being part of the government, through all that, what was your ideal? What was your thoughts and ideas behind cannabis? Was it even a thing for you in the service?
With Hoosier Veterans for Medical Cannabis really starts in 2016. Obviously, I was going through the VA, and for nearly 10 years, I was on opiates, oxycodone. And I was having to take more to get the same effects that it did at the very beginning, dealing with chronic back pain and whatnot. I was running the risk of accidentally overdosing. So I talked to my VA doctor. He said that we need to get you off these because, you know, you're at high risk of overdosing. So I asked him about all these other states passing medical cannabis laws and what his opinion was of it. And he says that, in his opinion, if I could prescribe and recommend it, I would, but I can't because of the federal laws. And that's how I got started on in 2016 with starting Hoosier Veterans for Medical Cannabis as a nonprofit organization. And I was still a federal employee until 2018 and did not use cannabis, but did all the research. And obviously 30 years before, you know, I've experimented with marijuana when I was in school and high school and whatnot. And, you know, I didn't touch it since then. But I looked at the medical benefits of it, and that's what got me going. And I was surprised the support I was seeing from other veterans that were around the country. Actually, I went out to a conference in California. I was asked to speak at a Patients Out of Time conference and met with a lot of veterans throughout the United States. And they saw what I was doing here in Indiana. And just kept pushing me in and encouraging me, and really overwhelmed with support. Unfortunately, we don't get that support down at the State House here in Indiana, but it's still a fight that, you know, is ongoing, and, you know, there looks like there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Well, I hope so, for Indiana's sake. You know, I mean, because you look every state around Indiana has some kind of a program.
Exactly.
You know, and Mr. Holcomb, you know, we sat in with a virtual thing with him, you know, about cannabis, you know, it's been about a month ago now. And you know, and it's always their go-to thing when they don't want to address the issue right then. You know, he was talking about needing more research and wanting it studied more, which
yeah.
is, you know,
yeah.
and I know that, absolutely no. Right. And I know that Indiana Normal has passed all the information that there is on cannabis to these people. And, you know, let's be honest, they're not ignorant people. They're humans, too. You know,
Governor Holcomb's comments in those areas is he says it all the time. It's a politician's way of sweeping it under the rug and avoiding it. Stuff. And he's not gonna do anything until the feds do something. Well, look at all the other states. Well, Indiana's not a referendum state like Michigan is and some of the surrounding states, you know. But if it was, we already know that we've got, you know, 4 out of 5 of our citizens are supportive of it. And that percentage of our veterans is even higher. Now, look what I've done since then for Indiana. I wrote resolutions through the Indiana Department of the VFW, the American Legion, and the AMBETS, all supporting legislation to support, medical cannabis legislations here in Indiana. And there are national resolutions through those organizations, too. So the momentum is going forward. And, you know, it's not a matter of if, it's when. But and Indiana's not doing anything. But as you can see all around us, you know, the United Nations and the World Health Organization has both reclassified cannabis into a, you know, recognizing it its medical benefit.
Yeah.
So it's no, you know, it's only a matter of time before the DEA and the FDA will approve and reschedule it too. So, and we know that, you know, in the 116th Congress, you had the Moores Act go through the House and didn't go over to the Senate in time for the elections and stuff, but it looks pretty hopeful that it's going to make its rounds this Congress and go over to the Senate for a vote this time. So it looks pretty positive. And there's other federal legislations that are going to most likely decriminalize it anyhow. So Indiana needs to get their butt, going and get something done. And they're not doing anything really fast. We're taking real slow steps, which is okay. We've got one bill that I'm really looking at and I'm really hopeful for, but if we don't hear anything by next week, by the deadline, it's not going to happen.
Right.
Jason and Shelley were down there yesterday. There was a bill, Bill 1043, that, you know, there was a problem with the hemp flowers. Now we have CBD in hemp, and we were instrumental in getting those legislations passed. The flower was smokable flower was not permissible here in Indiana, and that looks like it's out the window too. So that people that enjoy smoking hemp flower for whatever reasons, whether it's to get off cigarettes, you know, or an immediate effect of an ailment that they might have, like anxiety or depression or something to that effect, that's going to happen. So, unfortunately, the only time I went down there was last week. I went. There was a bill that was nothing more than requesting our Indiana Health Department to give the stats on the overdose and the suicide rate here in Indiana. Well, I went before that committee, basically saying I was before that committee 5 years ago when there were these anti-opiate bills that were being proposed. And there was nothing wrong with those bills, but in all actuality, I saw it within the VA. What happened in the VA was the VA was cutting off the veterans of their medication, of the opiates. And here's some of the results that happened. They were either dying on their medication, overdosing on their medication. They were being abruptly cut off, cold turkey. And I know by personal experience, but close Vietnam veteran friend of mine was on narcotics for years and years. And after being cut off cold turkey, within 3 days, he died from the shock. The third was they get cut off of their medications, of these opiates, and they turn to street drugs like heroin, and they overdose on the lead. Or fourth and finally, they come to wit's end and they commit suicide. And every year since the Indiana passed that legislation, which there was nothing wrong, it looked like it could, you know, it was the right thing to do, but in all actuality, it did more harm than good. The perfect example I like to use, are you familiar with Band of Brothers?
Yes.
Do you remember the time when they went through they liberated the concentration camp, and the soldiers saw all these prisoners that were dying of hunger and starvation, the walking dead and whatnot. So the soldiers, in turn, the only thing they could do and the right thing to do was to give them the food that they had. And they plundered a village and gave them food.
Yeah.
And shortly afterwards, the Surgeon General came out and said, stop beating them. You're killing them. They have to be slowly and gradually set back into good health. So it was a good thing for them to do to beat them, but in all actuality, they were doing more harm than good.
Right.
And that's the same way with these bills here in Indiana. You know, it's the right thing to do, but they really didn't take a good look at it. And the numbers are definitely showing the effects of legislation.
Right. Bad
or good, whatever you want to call it.
Right. We already know that, you know, an average of 22 vets a day take their lives, you know, and then you add in, you know, a state to where, you know, they don't allow any kind of out for them, and they were cut off completely. So, you know, in Indiana State themselves, that number is going to be slightly higher than that, than what the average claims,
right.
You know, because they don't have an out. And then in a lot of states, listen, you know, I know firsthand that, you know, if you are a vet, if you have served and you come out and you decide to tell your doctors at the VA that, you know, listen, despite what you say, I'm going to be a cannabis patient, trust and believe that everything that you fought for, no matter how long you served, your benefits will be yanked. You will no longer have the status of a veteran. You will no longer receive any benefits. You will receive nothing. And it's absolutely like you never even served. Trust and believe, this happens to a lot of veterans that decide, that choose to be cannabis patients over having that status of a veteran. And I know personal firsthand of that being done, and that does happen.
I've been a medical cannabis patient. Like I told you, I went to a conference in California, and I've seen a doctor while I was there, and I have my medical cannabis card, and been a medical cannabis patient ever since 2016. Even though I did not consume cannabis or CBD products until I retired in 2018, and I still, you know, I receive my medication here in Indiana, just like I do my medication from the VA. And I try to help veterans get their medical cannabis card. And, you know, there is some legality in it, but, you know, I've got a local prosecutor I went right to, and I told him that I will, you know, I let him know my patient status. And I told him if he wants to come after me, he's more than welcome. I said, I won't plea bargain with you. We'll go right to a jury trial. And if I've got 4 out of 5 of our citizens that are supportive of medical cannabis, you know, the first thing that's going to probably happen is you're going to get a jury nullification or a law certification.
Right.
And that would be a precedence within our state.
Right. And you know, go ahead. You know, it's only the right thing to do is to allow, you know, nonetheless, veterans to be able to be a veteran and have their medicine. You know, listen, what you got diagnosed with in California is the same thing that you have sitting here with me in Indiana. That diagnosis follows you. It doesn't stop just because you go to a state that's not legal. Your disease follows you. And if it was opiates, it would be no problem. Nobody would even say thing to you. You know, and that's the sad thing about it. And you know, people's got to stop and think that you have to see a doctor. And that is a real doctor. He has an MD behind his name that is allowed to, you know, give you cannabis. And it should be no different than getting a prescription of Lortab or Percocet or Vicodin or anything else. Cannabis should be able to be given to a person that should be able, imaginary borderlines that you're not allowed to cross because then your internet, you've now become some kind of, you know, drug trafficker because you've crossed state lines, a smuggler.
Right.
You know, and it's absolutely ridiculous because you can cross state lines with Vicodin. You could absolutely cross state line with hair, with synthetic heroin, but, you know, oxycontin. You know,
right.
You can absolutely do it. So it should not be it should not be a big deal, you know, especially in the times that we live in. Now it's 2022. The research time is done beyond. People are done beyond listening to the crap excuses, and it's time to actually get down to doing the work and due diligence for people like you and the many hundreds of thousands of Indianans that suffer from one condition or another. That lives could be changed, you know, the high rate of suicides could come down, the opiate, you know, addiction and the street drug addiction would slack off if people were allowed to have cannabis to treat those things that they were cut off the pharmaceuticals to begin with.
Right. We already know that by the numbers that in states that have medical cannabis, let's just say medical, you've seen a reduction on average of 25% in the overdose rate. Some are higher, some are lower, but on an average overall, it's about 25%. So, but unfortunately, in Indiana, we're going in the wrong direction. So, and we got, you know, and I run into veterans every day that are citizens that use cannabis for one reason or another for their ailments. And then you've got some like Jason Straw that have chosen to leave Indiana and move to Michigan. We call them cannabis refugees. And what's surprising about Jason and Jill, Jason is the chair of the Indiana Normal. So, and
that's
he lives
awesome.
In Michigan. And he does a lot of driving back and forth to the state house and some of the events that Normal's putting on. And, you know, he really bends over backwards and stuff. And, you know, more power to him and stuff.
I'm just going to go ahead and pop them and bring them on because, you know, they're absolutely my go-to. You know, I met them, you know, a couple years ago at an event with another person. And you know, the knowledge that these two have between the two of them is phenomenal. And I know that Shelly and Jason have a lot of people that depend on them in Indiana and in Michigan. And what they do is absolutely amazing thing. Hey, welcome you guys. Thank you for joining the show.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah,
you
so,
too.
You know, you being the chair of Indiana Normal and with the driving that you do and the fighting that you do for Indiana, being a refugee in Michigan is a feat in itself. And being who you are to begin with, I know your heart, man. I mean, I've worked alongside you a couple of times, and I know the passion that you have. I've listened to you talk to people. The way that you, you know, I wouldn't expect anything less out of you.
Well, we do what we can. I mean, we're both nurses. We both have big hearts. And that's what a lot of people go into is healthcare when they want to help people.
Yeah.
And when you see the issues, like Jeff was talking about with the opioid crisis, you have to have good data to be able to to move forward, like Jeff was talking about, Senate Bill 84, the mandatory reporting of drug overdoses and suicide, which Senator Gene Lysing mentioned that they haven't reported since 2020. So we're going on 2 years now, not report for 2020 or 2021 in Indiana.
So we went to Indiana this week because we wanted to kind of address that and just give some more research, because we thought there was another bill coming up, and you never know. So we got into Indiana on Tuesday thinking we were just going to go down and do some education stuff. We ended up showing up for the – not the baby show for the prosecutor. All the prosecutors, and I was in my can of the scrubs, so I got a lot of attention to me. And they don't like me wearing those, apparently.
They were probably trying to figure out what county you're from and which one of them was going to get you.
And then we got to stay Tuesday, or got to stay for Wednesday because they were hearing a bill.
Yeah,
we got out kind of late, so we actually made arrangements to stay in Indiana, and I got to testify on the committee for that. It was going to the floor now. House floor now.
I think what was really interesting watching it, because I wasn't there, but I did see it, was interesting how the chair really put the prosecutors in their place. I mean, they made an argument, and the chair just blew it away and said, "Hey, are you looking at the data? Are you did you even research?" It was really. Yeah, I thought it was kind of funny, in a sense. But and the vote pick out of that committee was 10-2.
Yeah, so, 10-3. Well, the next day it changed. We left. I don't know. We didn't see it for 24 hours. So yeah, I
I did enjoy the legislators talking to the state trooper patrolman, and when they asked him, so your dogs can't tell the difference between hemp flower and marijuana flower. And then one of them said, can your dog tell the difference between a mini gummy and a marijuana gummy? And they're like, no, it's on both of them. So when you look at that, we already have products that the drug dog has hit on, allow them to come into your vehicle and search it, or you, because they hit on a legal substance. In a lot of other states, the Supreme Court of Pennsylvania ruled that you can no longer use the smell test or the drug dog to have probable cause.
Ohio is that way, too. Thank God.
In Indiana, the prosecutor and the Indiana State Trooper, they wanted to be able, if they saw a flower, they wanted to be able to search your vehicle irregardless of what it is. So that's a tool that they use to violate our rights as citizens, because they could have mistaken the other flower, like a hops. It looks very similar from a distance. They say, oh, I didn't search your car because I have probable cause because I saw a flower in your vehicle. So
what got me now?
So one of the things, when Jeff told us about Senate Bill 84 and the lack of reporting on opioids, we went to the Narcan heat map that Indiana has. This is 2014. As you can see, there's not a whole lot as far as the Narcan. And these are only Narcan doses that are administered by the EMS or ambulance personnel. So hospitals doesn't include people who are trained at home who have Narcan kits. Now, that was 2014. Now, there's a stark difference.
Wow.
This dots everywhere in the state of Indiana. So we understand that this is both illicit and legal drugs that people have overdosed on, and they've been revived with Narcan. And you can see that it's an explosion in the last 7 years.
And in 2019 to 2020, the increase in the overdose rate was 33% here in Indiana, reported by one of our local TV and the CBD, and CDC.
And the thing is they took away your guys' CBD that you were allowed to have to begin with. And at least that little bit was something to give Indianians, you know, something, you know, to try to start to kick the opioids, you know, because you can with high doses of CBD and CBG and stuff,
right.
You can kick the opioid habit. And it can't, it will ease it, you know. And listen, again, I'm not a doctor, and, you know, I'm not telling you just, you know, go, you know, consume a lot of this and quit taking your medicine, by no means. But consult a doctor and know what you have to have and know your body. That's what I said, you know. But they took away your, you know, your guys' ability to even start to heal by taking away your health to begin with.
Yeah, that's correct. In 2017 was the peak. They passed an Narcan bill where they're passing out, and they legalized hemp around that time, and it dropped a little bit, and then went right back up. Because they took away, what year did they take away the hemp flower from us, Jeff? Do you remember?
2019.
No, I have no idea. found out that it worked, they took it away.
I think it was 2019 that it got yanked from you guys.
Yeah, so when you look from 2019 to 2020, it was probably one of the biggest increases that you see ever since they've been tracking it in 99. So from 99 to 2017, it just went up. There was no down that we can tell. Now, in 2018, there was a slight dip down, and then when they took the flower back, you see the numbers in 2020, it just shot up.
Right, and that just shows that, you know, that the plant works. You know, and to restrict adults, you know, and I don't care where you live, and, you know, I've heard a lot of times people say, oh, well, you know, I'm just living in the wrong state. I need to move. Like you guys had to move away from Indiana to be able to fix yourself, to heal. And it should not be that way. You know, as adults, there should be a line. You know, there should be, you know, okay, you are an adult, make your choice. And we're not going to bother you if that is your choice. And that's the way it should be for all adults across the board, everywhere. You know, an adult, the consequences. Either do it or you don't. And that's the way it should be. You know, they force the pharmaceuticals on you. You know, they're doctors, and you grow up all your life hearing that, you know, these are certain people that you trust and you listen to, and then they know best for you. But they're the ones who absolutely are the ones who put us in the epidemic that we're in.
Right.
They only have tools that they have, you know. So, unfortunately, this is what they were taught. And what tools they have with patients.
Right. And so they're inhibited from the very start because they don't even teach them the endocannabinoid system. That is another system that they, you know, don't even teach about.
Now, and if you think about it, the colleges are taught because the only people who have the money to do the education and the research for the colleges is the pharmaceutical companies. The pharmaceutical companies, the colleges. And we heard the other day that the FDA, right?
FDA, yes.
Was 45% funded by the pharmaceutical companies in the U.S.
Oh, yeah. You know, the pharmaceutical companies fund almost absolutely every aspect of our lives. You know, they make so much things, so many things that, if you would stop with all the pharmaceutical companies, half of our products would be gone. Good thing, absolutely, yes. But there are some things that we still need that these idiots make. And it's a shame that, you know, that these pharmaceutical companies make a variety of so many things that so many people do absolutely need sometimes.
One of the things that I believe is happening after looking up Dr. Raphael Mishul's current work in California with a drug company, they have isolated 14 cannabinoid acids, then attach an ester to it to extend the shelf life. So the acids, the fresh plant, are the most beneficial health product of the plant. So you can treat the endocannabinoid system by using these. 3 of the 14 cannabinoid acids that they've developed are in human trials currently in California. What this tells me is the pharmaceutical companies are spending a lot of money to develop these drugs before we go legal nationally. Now, what happened with hemp CBD, we talked to an FDA regulatory attorney, and he said, under the law, all CBD is illegal except for the stuff that the pharmaceutical companies have made and provided. Now, your state is allowing CBD because of the benefit. The problem is it's in conflict with federal law, and they said the federal government currently is not going after any CBD companies currently. All they're doing is if there's a big CBD company that advertises that CBD has a medicinal benefit, they'll go after them, they'll find them, and take a whole bunch of money and shut them down. Because then they become in conflict with the product Epidiolex that was developed by CW Pharmaceuticals. So their people are spending, or the insurance company for them is spending around $32,000 a year. A decent CBD product for a year will cost you around $1,000. That does pretty much the same thing.
That's absolutely ridiculous. You know, there's a, can you hear me still? I lost something.
We can hear you.
Okay, there I am. You know, there for a long time, you know, pharmaceutical companies have been passing and getting patents for cannabinoids, you know, for, you know, they're taking from the plant. And like you said, they're chemically mimicking that, and they're passing that, and they're getting patents for it, and it's mimicking the plant. So, the, you know, I think the big one is 6630507. That allows people. What's that? Yeah. They're patented by the federal government, but yet they say that there's no medicinal values. So if there's no medicinal values, why give a patent to something that uses that as medicinal value for medicinal purposes? But yet there's no medicinal value to it, and that's their that they continue to say that. You know, they need to study it more because there's no, you know, real, you know, medical value to it. But yet there's 25, 27, 30 of them, 30-some patents for some part of cannabis that they have mimicked.
Well, the interesting thing when you talk about this is the medical schools. So there's all this information and that's out there about cannabinoids. The medical schools, I was reading the Fast Fact book on marijuana and opioids. Okay? The doctor asked the universities, the medical universities, why don't you teach about the endocannabinoid system? Because at that time, 87% didn't, it's like 83% now. And their quote was, since the only way that we know to treat the endocannabinoid system is with cannabis, marijuana, which is illegal federally, what's the point in teaching about the endocannabinoid system since we're not allowed to federally? And I thought, wow. So if they said, everything dealing with the lungs is illegal, would you stop teaching about the pulmonary system, the lungs?
Well, they probably already give cannabis meds because there's Marinol and Epidiolex in the hospital. They're hospital pharmaceuticals. So they might even give something that already interacts with the endocannabinoid system and not know with other medications because they're uneducated. It does affect some medications.
Right. And it does.
Before,
you're absolutely right.
And before 1970, it was in the medical curriculum because I've actually talked to some doctors and nurses that when they did go through school during that time frame, that it was taught as part of their academia. So,
right. Now, I do want to throw this attention because I had a lady on the beginning of the season who is a professor at John Patrick University, Jenna Champagne, who is a nurse. She's got a whole list of qualifications. But she's a professor there. She's also the founder of Integrated Holistic Care. She's also a founder of Cannabis Nurses Approved. But she teaches classes there. She teaches doctors there at John Patrick University about cannabis and about the endocannabinoid system. And I think it is the first in the nation that has a qualified university class that teaches doctors and nurses and stuff that want to learn about this, which I think is absolutely an amazing thing for an integrated university, John Patrick. And I'm going to keep saying that because I want to make sure that I get it right. It's John Patrick University, where she's a nurse and a professor at, which I think is I think that they need to offer that at all colleges. And I think all colleges, especially medical colleges, need to learn about the endocannabinoid system.
There's another program from Maryland, the Baltimore University has a program to get your, especially in cannabinoid medicine for pharmacists. So they just cover with that certification everything with cannabinoids that a physician or that a pharmacist should know.
Now, does they teach? Now, I want to know because, and I think that I asked you guys a couple of seasons ago when I had you guys on. You know, I'd like to know because I know that they do a lot of times. You know, if you're on one medicine, they can take you off of that medicine and give you another medicine, but at a different rate. But it's the same as this medicine at what rate you were taking, at the milligrams you were taking. I would like to see a conversion rate for pharmaceutical medicine on one side about, you know, this, you know, milligram, this milligram, this milligram. You need to take this amount of cannabis. I would like to see something like that.
Have approved dosages in Israel.
There's actually morphine equivalents for THC that they have figured out.
But Michelin will tell you they have dosages like so many like CBD ratios, the THC ratios.
Well, that's different. That's for treating the different diseases. What he's talking about is if you're going to go from morphine to cannabis, they already have that figured out. And for all opioids, they base it off of the morphine equivalent. So they already have a morphine equivalent for THC. So they know this stuff already.
Right.
I don't have papers right in front of me, but there was a study that I was reading about that talked about the standardized morphine equivalent for THC.
And it's quite helpful, too, because I've helped out a couple of veterans that have passed on. They were terminally ill. And fortunately, here in the United States, they fell under the right to try law. So if you're a terminally ill patient or you have an illness that qualifies, that you can take anything you want. And it doesn't matter where you're at. And they said they'd much rather take the cannabis than the morphine. It was just a lot easier on them to deal with the pain and psychologically too.
The quality of life as well, because
right.
You know with something like morphine, you know, you're a zombie. You really don't function well
right.
with that. But, you know, you can take the cannabis and be able to function, still maintain your pain level.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, in a whole, I think that that's what all adults want. They just want to feel better and without having to take loads and loads of pharmaceuticals.
Yeah, and morphine is a great drug for end of life, make it easier for you to breathe. It provides some pain relief. The further we get away from the more natural products like morphine and start going into synthetic, the more problems you tend to have. But I worked in a cancer unit, and our go-to was morphine. We treated a lot of the patients with morphine or morphine drip. We gave some of the oral pills with people who weren't terminal, but terminal patients, they got an IV of morphine, which was useful, but I think that the problem is you start getting outside of the hospital.
Well, I say we just helped a nurse practitioner dad passed away with cancer. And he was with the cancer. We made gummies for him, high, like full plant gummies. And he did some CBD oils too to control his pain because he had a lot of pain and morphine wasn't doing it. But he was also able to stay awake longer and have quality time with his family at the end before he passed away. So they were pretty happy that they had the option. You know, they had to come to Michigan to get it.
Yeah, that's the problem with morphine. You're very sedated, and the interactions with human life that family members should be having don't happen.
Right. And you know, again, it just goes back to quality of life. You know, we just all want to have a better quality of life. And let's be honest and truthful that, you know, cannabis does and can provide a better quality of life when consumed to your level on a day-to-day basis.
You have a whole system. You have receptors in people's bodies, so.
Right.
Necessary. It's like a diet. It's like something that, you know, you're depleted, you're sick.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know,
we have patients who prefer their opioids, and they found that marijuana it helps a little bit, but doesn't help as much as the opioids. Now, I believe that cannabis can be used as a harm reduction tool. The opioids are fine in the medical community, and patients that need them should have them. But if you have a safer alternative, it would be better to go with that. There's a study that Dr. Sokar reviewed last month over opioid reduction. And from a study, and they showed that 72.6% of patients in the study were either able to cease or decrease their opioid use. Now, like what Jeff was talking about, he kept building up a tolerance to it. Marijuana or other forms of cannabis could help lower the amount of opioids that you need in conjunction. But the problem with that is the healthcare professionals must be trained to walk people through these steps to teach them how to do it safely.
Right.
Right. And see, Indiana, you know, just that, you know, they've done it wrong where they, you know, absolutely just cold turkey cut people. You know, which is absolutely the wrong thing to do. You know, and it's like, you know, like he said, you know, a starving person, you just don't want to, you know, take them to an all-you-can-eat buffet. You know, give them a candy bar. You know, and, it's just absolutely, it dumbfounds me how a state full of people that need. And you can definitely see the need in a lot of people that, you know, that need cannabis and that should have walls in place to protect the people that have to have cannabis at this point that can protect them by being a patient, you know, instead of creating an entire state of criminal, which is wrong. You should never force an adult to be a criminal because they need health care. That is absolutely the wrong thing to do.
And the way that you change this is by having citizens register to vote and contact their representatives, senators, their elected officials to let them know at all levels of government that they want cannabis reform change, and they have to call, they have to email, they have to write their legislators. Yeah,
we arm them. We just, like, it's legislation day when they're walking out, we're right there with our brochures, our information. I have all my drugs with leads on them. So we just, you know, we don't, there's not going to be a reason that they can't. They're not going to say they didn't know.
And we mail. They're
not going to say they didn't know.
Every single elected senator and House rep in Indiana state government a copy of Shelley's brochure, and we've been handing them the normal national clinical application guide for cannabis and cannabinoids to the ones that we can get to. Now, we drop stuff off, also packets of information for them at the desk. So if you show up in person and you can't get a visit with them, you can always leave your information that you want to provide them with the secretary at the front desk. They have four of them. We have two on each side for the House and the Senate, and then one for each party, the Republicans and Democrats.
Right on. Yeah, and, you know, with Indiana, the way your guys' laws are and stuff, that's the best way to do it, is you need to contact your representatives. To make them do things, you know, and with you, Jeff, I want to thank you very much for your service and what you do for all vets. You know, I know that what you do for Indiana is going to reflect for all over, you know, because these laws that, you know, take effect in one state tend to sometimes flow into other states.
Well, we're all over the country. I mean, one thing I've noticed, I do podcasts with the Veterans Action Corps that is deeply involved, you know, in different states, from Texas to Virginia, to all, you know, whether they're legal or illegal states. We're all getting together, and we're all trying to do something. I've even gone so as far as go down in 2017, put a forum in Washington, D.C., at the Rayburn House building before senior members of the VA staff, and we had doctors throughout the United States. Two of the doctors in my forum were part of the National Academy of Science, Engineering, and Health Medicine that we're all familiar with, 2017 report. And I had veterans, even I had come down from Canada, a doctor from Canada and a veteran from Canada. We can look at the VA system in Canada as a good example. They don't prescribe or distribute cannabis to their veterans, but they do allocate funds for them to participate in government-run cannabis programs. So,
well, that's awesome.
Yeah. So, again, you know, it's not over yet, and there is light at the end of the tunnel, and I'm sure we're going to get things done.
All right, and I hope the best for Indiana, because, you know, I've got a lot of friends that, you know, are in Indiana, and I know you know the predicament that they're in, and I feel for them, you know, every day, you know, and I take a chance because I work in Indiana, you know, and being a cannabis patient from Ohio, you know, with Indiana with a zero tolerance policy, you know, I take a chance every day that I go to work, because most of my work is in Indiana, you know, and I feel deeply for everybody that has to deal on this level of fear of just living, and that should, you know, adults should not have to be in fear of living.
Well, you're right. You make great points. I went to Indiana. I tried to limit my amount of cannabis I use and focus more on CBD, and we spent 3 days this week in Indiana fighting, and on the last day, I had this massive migraine. I hadn't had a migraine like this since I started marijuana. So when I went back to Indiana, it was like an 8 out of 10 pain. I could barely function. I took a little Delta 8, and that kind of even healed it, but it wasn't until I was able to get marijuana, I was able to get my migraine completely under control.
All right. And see, that just shows that, you know, with and without cannabis, the effects of life, you know, you are on a better whole when you do have when you have access to cannabis and you're able to treat yourself with cannabis and with the amount of dosage that you need to. And I just hope that, you know, eventually that all people in Indiana can share in that and feel safe medicating.
Well, as one of the representatives, Representative Linus, said a year ago, I would never think I'd vote yes on a hemp flower bill. He said, but my brother had ALS, and he said that struck a chord with him. He saw the light that this flower, that hemp flower at least, needed to be legal so his brother could have access to it legally and allow him to relieve this cancer pain and symptoms.
Right. And it does. It absolutely does. And you know, you're looking at four people that know 100% what cannabis can do for your body and what it can do for you as far as dealing with pain. You know, I use it on a day-to-day basis to maintain the pain that I deal with all that I have to deal with, you know, without the pharmaceutical medicines, because I had an issue with that, and I don't want to have an issue. I like being the person I am now versus the person that I was. And I think that that's another big plus for me, and I know that it'd be a big plus for a lot of people, you know, just healthier, feeling better.
Yeah, I know. This is probably the best I've felt being on marijuana, hemp CBD, in probably a decade or so.
We just seem to get better all the time. We're off of all of our daily pharmaceuticals. We did have to take something for nausea the other day because we were in Indiana, you know, treat like we would treat at home.
Yeah, so
and
I think Zofran
on board for that.
Yeah, they still give me a PRN Zofran, and when I go to Indiana, I can guarantee you I'm probably popping six of those each day that I'm in there because of the chronic nausea that I have.
Stress, not being able to do our normal routine, having our meds.
Right. So, in closing, you guys, what information or what message do you have for the audience listening?
Well, hopefully our conversation was informative for somebody and they gleaned something off of it. I have a website, Hoosier Veterans for Medical Cannabis, and a Facebook page. I show how to get a medical cannabis card, even though you're not here and you don't live here in Indiana. But we're still fighting the fight, and Shelly and Jason are right there with us, and we're going to be there to the end.
Yeah.
In Indiana Normal, on their webpage and the Facebook pages that we have, or Facebook page we have, we show you who the chairs are, what bills are up, who to contact, and it's important to look at the information because we've noticed that we used to reach 1.5 million people a month. Now we're down to 40 to 100,000, and we believe we're being Facebook banned or shadowed so that people can't hear information. So if you follow us, they said only about 7% of the people are actually getting the information now that are following us and liking us that want the information. So go to the page, you know, at least once a week and check out what's going on at the State House during the legislative session.
Right on. Absolutely. You guys, thank you again always for joining us on CannaViews. You guys were always amazing. Jeff, thank you very much for joining us. And definitely go check out Jeff's site. Shelly and Jason, thank you very much, you guys. And I, you know, definitely going to look forward to having you guys on again and again.
Everything you do.
Thank you.
Hey, thank you, guys. You know, guys, as always, you know, I appreciate everybody watching us here on Facebook, but I'd also like you to, and also encourage you to definitely go and find a cannabis prisoner to write to. If nothing more, just to make their day, because he can. I know that, you know, that would definitely go a long way, hearing their name called during mail time. So please go over to CannaConvictProject.com and or FreedomGrowForever.org to find a plant prisoner to write to today. Thank you very much for joining us. You guys have a great night, Aaron. Join us on Blog Talk Radio.